In terms of parliamentary rules, the chairperson unfortunately is not here today. So in his absence, we need to elect a standing chairperson for the day. Can I call for any nominations?
Good morning, honourable members. Good morning to our representative from the National Treasury, as well as our legal advisor and members of the media present here. We are continuing, members, with the two bills that we entertained yesterday. Today's meeting is to focus on our deliberation as a committee on the two bills. Our first item will be focusing on the rates and monetary amounts and amendment of revenue laws bill. Maybe even before we start looking at the bill, clause by clause, allow me to, because I remember there were issues that were raised and assigned to our legal advisor on the same bill. So maybe before we deal with the bill clause by clause, I will allow our legal advisor just to give his take on these issues. And if there's any need for our members from National Treasury to give a response, that will be dealt with. So without any further ado, I'm going to allow Advocate Jenkins just to take us through on his legal opinion on this bill. Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, members and colleagues. The issue that was raised in respect of the rates and monetary amounts and amendment of revenue laws bill was the retrospectivity of the rates, and there was specifically an issue concerning the change in the withholding tax on dividends. I think to address those concerns, one must just look at what's allowed in terms of the Constitution, what's not allowed. In terms of Section 35 of the Constitution, one is not allowed to be convicted. One act cannot prescribe that someone is committing an offence retrospectively. And that's where the limitation on retrospectivity stops. So in other words, a piece of legislation may work retrospectively, but you can't convict someone of an offence which was not an offence at the time when it was committed. Now, as far as my understanding of the rates and monetary amounts go, the retrospectivity does not pertain to criminal offences, so I don't think there's a bar against that. But what we will see in practice is that when this bill becomes an act and it becomes operative, you will have then legally applicable rates from a date in the past. And the only issue that I've thought of was a practical issue of how do you collect certain taxes which are now suddenly due, that weren't due at the time when somebody paid it. And that, I think, can only happen with those taxes which are not subject to an assessment later in the year, like personal income tax. So I don't think personal income tax or those will be an issue. You might find issues concerning customs and excise, if those rates apply retrospectively and someone has already paid a certain amount of tax, or of course on the dividend withholding tax. But it's a practical issue of how to collect those taxes, and I'm aware of various provisions in the Income Tax Act and other tax acts which allow National Treasury to access information and funds which are due to it. So, Chairperson, in short, the concern about retrospectivity I don't think is so much a legal concern as how do we do it in practice. I don't see a constitutional problem with any provisions in the bill that I went through. You've asked me last night also to go through it quite carefully. I didn't pick up anything which put the alarm bells on for me in terms of constitutionality. So I want to stop it there and thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Advocate Jenkins. Remember, this is just a straightforward opinion. I don't think it needs further elaboration from National Treasury, because this is an opinion which is in concurrence with the approach of National Treasury. So I will go into, not unless there are questions on a specific issue from members. If there are no questions, we will then entertain the bill clause by clause. I hope members do have the copies of the bill.
We'll start from here.
You can even go page by page. Listen, can I ask a question to Advocate Jenkins?
All right, thank you, you're welcome.
Yeah, I just want to ask him, I can't see him, but behind me, okay. In the income tax, you know, clearly it states 10%. When will we amend that clause in the income tax? And, you know, this has been raised, the others is conventions, you know, it happened all the time, and this one slips into the slipstream of the convention, but it is specifically stated in the Act. So we haven't seen anything from Treasury that they want to amend that little paragraph in the Act, or will it come with a TLA later?
All right, Honourable Harris, is there a follow-up question or another question?
Thanks, Chair. I understand the advocate's point. What I'm interested in is the... obviously, as Honourable Cornell said, we have a legislated dividends tax rate of 10%. The intention has been expressed to take it to 15% in this law, in Clause 6, I believe. What about taxpayers who are complying with the law by submitting at 10%, but then retrospectively were meant to have submitted at 15%? What about the interest payments associated with that differential? Because they can't, for the period between when the intention was tabled and when this law will actually be enacted, there will be some, I'm assuming, interest consequences. What is the legality around those payments for taxpayers?
Okay, Mr. Jenkins, our tax people from the outside, Janine, I think you might also help where you think is possible. But let's allow Mr. Jenkins to come in first.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Kurnov, I thought that amendment is in Clause 6. That's in Clause 6, because that needs to be done. It can't just remain an intention. I agree on that. And Honourable Harris, that... I've had some personal experience with SARS, and I don't want to spill all the beans here, but where there is an issue of, it wasn't my fault, and which I explained to them, you know, it wasn't my fault. I had to register as a provisional taxpayer, and I showed them the email where I intended to to submit, but then because of various things, they only came to me quite late and they wanted to ask me some interest on what I owed them. But that explanation sufficed. So there is a provision where the SARS can use a discretion. And I would advise SARS, and it's just friendly advice, it's not a resolution, to say in circumstances which you've indicated, Honourable Harris, clearly I would not try and charge someone criminally because they haven't paid their tax. I mean, when the assessment comes that you do owe a certain amount, I would also hesitate to say you should pay interest on that, simply because the interest amounts to a type of penalty, as far as I understand, income tax. And I won't penalize someone for complying with the law. But that being said, someone will be liable to pay that additional 5% if that was not withheld, because the law will work retrospectively, and one will say, therefore, it's operative from a certain date, and therefore so much is due to SARS from you. But the interest amount and those things, as I say, I know there's a discretion that SARS can apply, and from my limited knowledge of income tax law, I would suggest it's a good place to exercise that discretion.
You want to give any further input?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. In respect of the necessary amendments to the Income Tax Act to change the rate from 10 to 15%, that is included in Clause 15 of the bill, or Clause 6 of the bill, sorry. And in respect of the interest payments, that would be, my understanding would be that would be dealt with in accordance with the relevant provisions in the income tax legislation regarding when interest is due and payable and when it is imposed with effect from. Now, the overall approach in this act is, in relation to these tax changes, is similar to how it has been conducted over the past many years, where the rates are announced with the budget and people are aware of what the proposed rates are going to be, and generally people also take those changes into account and make appropriate plans also. So this isn't a new approach that is being adopted in respect of this year compared to last year. It's not a substantial change in approach. Thank you.
The Chairman.
Thank you very much. Yes, I will allow you, Mr. Ambrosini.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would wish for us to really listen carefully to what is being said, the serious part of it. There is a constitutional prohibition to penalize people for doing things which at the time when they do it is not a crime, is not sanctioned as a crime. I do accept that this is not a criminal aspect. However, people are sanctioned with interest, and not only interest, but with penalties, administrative penalties, for non-compliance with tax laws. What the language GST tells us that it deems to come into operation. There is no escaping this. The amount of payment which should have been done in terms of law is the one which is going to be decided by the law afterward. Confronted with this, the department gives us the answer of, you should have known that because we told you we were going to change the law retroactively. And therefore people should have paid what was not due to anticipate what Parliament was going to do. Now I get goosebumps with this type of thinking. First of all, I can just pack my bags and leave, because the department has decided, has announced, and people must begin paying on the basis of what the department tells them the law will be. What if we decide to take this 15 to 25, or to turn it down to 9? We say what it is. Secondly, the notion that the taxpayer needs to protect himself not only from what the law is, but from what the law could be, and be subjected to speculation law is bizarre. We cannot have retroactive provisions when we make it worse for the taxpayer. The rebate is fine, I don't have a problem. Then we give them a tax break. But you can't increase it. I mean, you wouldn't want that to happen to you, Mr. Chairman. You wouldn't want it to happen to your family. How can we impose it on everyone else?
All right, your point is noted. Members, but also the response from both Mr. Jenkins, our advocate, and representative from National Treasury is noted on this aspect. So let's go to the details of the bill, starting with page, which is, I think, page 2, which is catering for clause 1. Are we content with that clause? Your silence implies that I can move to the next page.
Mr. Chairman, can we please proceed, so point of order, according to procedure and vote on clauses?
Sorry, Chair, I think Honourable Ambrosin is not in order here. You need to recognize the member before the member switch on the mic. Can we just follow that?
Point of order, she has not been recognized.
I'm not sure, Mr. Ambrosin, if you got any intention of holding our meeting to ransom, or you got any intention of assisting us to conclude on the bills that are in front of us, because some of these basic rules are just straightforward. But nevertheless, if you want us to deal with this process clause by clause, then it's fine. I hope we have time to attend to other committees, because we are a bit considerate of the fact that you have to attend to 10 committees in a day. So if you want us to do clause by clause, then that simply says you won't be able to attend to other commitments assigned to you by your party. But it's fine, we'll do that, just to cut a long story short. We are on page 2, clause 1, subsection 1. Any submission on that clause? Subsection 2. Any submission on that? Subsection 3. Any submission on that? Subsection 4, A, B, C. Any submission on that? Subsection 5. Any submission on that? Now we are moving to page 3. Page 3, clause 2, subsection 1. Any submission on that? A, B, C.
Mr. Chairman? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. People are hurting out there. And either we are serious about giving them a break or we are not. I mean, I look at this, this is only addressing the tax drag relating to inflation. I have enormous problems with the calculations of inflation. There is a huge gap between inflation and the cost of living. There is, the cost of living is about 15%. The inflation is calculated by the Reserve Bank. It's about 6%. So I don't think that any of these figures are adequate to achieve the purpose. And I move that them be doubled.
Could you please come again with your recommendation, Mr. I can't hear you clearly, you know.
I move that all those figures be doubled.
Yes, are you referring to? Are you in subsection 1 of clause 2?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. The only figures which appear on the three figures which appear in that sub clause.
Okay, members, there is this submission from Ambrosini. Could we please entertain this? Apparently, we have the whole day here. Honorable Tugazana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We've got different figures on the subsection, on section 1. Could the Honorable Member maybe give us the reasons for changing and to change to what? Because here it's based on some facts.
Honorable Kouranov.
Yes. Can I just, you know, it's easy to sit in opposition and to trying to score political points on these issues. I'm not saying that is the case, but it is easy when we do it in terms of this bill. I just want to ask Africa Jenkins whether we legally can do it. Maybe, you know, in terms of the fiscal framework, maybe you must just give us some guidance there.
All right, there are two questions that you are currently entertaining as to why do you want us to double the figures, but I think the question posed by Honorable Kouranov is more of a question that seeks, I mean, to direct how we deal with this issue as requested by Honorable Ambrosini. Maybe before we get your response, Honorable Ambrosini, let's get to know Mr. Jenkins' take on this particular issue.
Thank you, Chairperson. As is well aware, from 2009 we have this Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act that specify how we deal with the amendment of money bills in Parliament. And the sequence that's set out in that act is first Parliament considers and adopt or reject or amend the fiscal framework. And the fiscal framework there is the balance between what our revenue and our expenditure, in short. So, and then what is our percentage of surplus or deficit? So if one chart starts changing these amendments and it does not affect the fiscal framework, then it's in order, so long as we have the, I mean, there's some certain other principles of tax collection that's set out in Section 11 of that Act, which one must look at to not do that. And I mean, I don't have the Act here, but I don't think that's the issue here. The issue here is if we, in other words, collect less revenue in terms of the proposed amendment from Honorable Ambrosini, we must just make sure that it doesn't actually affect the fiscal framework. So we'll have to possibly increase tax at other points, maybe the revenue with other dividends withholding tax should then be. I don't know, sir, but there's a problem. The procedure spelled out in the Money Bills Amendment Procedure would require that we have this sort of keyhole alignment with the fiscal framework, the division of revenue bill, and then appropriation of how much money we're going to spend there, and the tax laws, which is the revenue collection. And I mean, with the lack, if I can put it like this, with the lack of capacity from the budget office that will be primarily responsible to make sure that all these figures are tallied up, I would hesitate to continue with. Sorry, sir. No, what I was saying is, whilst we do not have that budget office established, and that function of the budget office will make sure that these figures then tally up, in other words, our projections of revenue in the future and our expenditure, so that we don't upset the fiscal framework, I would hesitate to amend the figures that we have here. There might be a chance that it's also out of procedure in terms of that act.
Okay, thank you very much, Advocate Jenkins. Yes, thank you. You wanted to pose a question or maybe to make a suggestion, Honorable Harris?
A question to Advocate Jenkins, Chair. A question.
Okay, then pose a question.
I accept the point. However, if this committee did vote to increase that rebate, as the advocate says, that would be a tax loss. What if, however, this committee then voted to decrease an equivalent amount of expenditure? Therefore, at the top line in the fiscal framework, the effect would be balanced. Is it acceptable if we match proposed amendments with balancing effects, or does the entire fiscal framework, does it have to remain in balance, or does it have to remain intact as voted by us?
Honourable Tata, do you want to pose a question?
Chair, listening to Advocate Jenkins,
I think let's not keep on gambling, because if we do that, we are going to reap the repercussions of other things that it's not intended to do. For now, I propose, Chair, taking from the response that there's nothing we can do for now, because we are not having the other document that we can refer to, and we don't know what will be the later consequences of that. And therefore, I propose, Chair, that let's go back to your initial stage of trying to adopt this report.
Okay, Janina, I've noted you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Further to what Advocate Jenkins has stated, which is very important, Section 13 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act also provides that the minister would have to be provided with an opportunity to respond to any proposed amendments for a period of 14 days before the act would be able to be, or the report would be able to be submitted to the National Assembly. And in response to Honourable Harris's question, the fiscal framework for this financial year has been adopted by Parliament, and so that is a fixed matter at this stage. So the expenditure side of things has effectively been set at this point. So the only adjustments that really can be made could be adjusting within the revenue collection process, like, you know, the rates and thresholds that are set out. And that would be quite a complicated matter, and it would also require the analysis that Advocate Jenkins has certainly proposed in order to assess appropriately, as required by the Act, what the actual implications are on the revenue collection and how other adjustments might offset that. So it is quite a complicated approach that would need careful development and consideration, I would submit, formally the committee proposing any amendments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I fully understand it's a very complicated process, and I think perhaps it's a bit late to turn the wagon around, but I'm trying to understand from the Honourable Abumrasini why the proposal is made to double the amounts in terms of rebates. And if you look at the effect on older people and you look at the amounts in terms of value for money, I fully agree with him that it's a very low amount. You know, it doesn't have a significant impact on anybody's financial position. So his proposal to double the amounts, if it's correctly so, to empower older people to assist people, then I think it should be noted that in future perhaps we should consider it. My point that I'm trying to make, that I do have a bit of sympathy with his proposal in terms of the value for money, in terms of the amounts, which is very small amounts in the context of the value of the rand for the current situation.
Bossini, your last take on the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that this is a fundamental point that may be worthwhile for us to discuss, because it really goes to the issue of what are we doing here. Advocate Jenkins, correctly, one needs to appreciate, basically say, I really don't know how it all works, I need to look it up. And each advocate is in that position. One cannot be expected to give a legal opinion just because happens to be there, and I sympathize with him enormously. So the department tells us it's complicated. And the department is right, it's complicated. But it's what we do. What is not emerging is that it starts from here. The first process, the first part of the process is for us, a committee, to decide to change this. The policy framework is exactly that. It's a framework. So if we take the first step here, then we need to take the second step of either balancing it through the giving the minister the opportunity, the minister comes back, then we need to balance or if we need to increase the deficit. And in doing that type of thing, we are going to find ourselves not properly assisted, because the budget office is not there. But it all starts with this committee saying that's what we want, because we are at the beginning and the end of this process. We can impose any tax we wish, and we can repeal any tax we wish. We can. It is this committee which carries the burden. I thought that this was a good proposal. Folks are hurting out there, and we can change it. I mean, I think we need to look at bills like this, not to increase taxes, but especially for the most vulnerable segments of the population, to give tax breaks, Mr. Chairman. So I stand on the proposal, and obviously it's your decision how to take it further. Thank you.
You wanted to have a last take on the matter, Honorable Chenga?
Thank you, Chair. Just to respond to that, Honorable Harris's question. Now, that is correct. I mean, the sequence on that act is we consider and adopt or change the fiscal framework. Once we've done that and you get to the point between revenue and expenditure, if you then want to decrease revenue, you have to decrease expenditure. The procedure for that is something that really needs to be worked out, because of course it will be the Committee on Appropriations that deal with expenditures. So that needs to be done. The Budget Office is central to this. For the benefit of the members here, we have Professor Jarrett from the Development Bank of South Africa that's now starting to project manage and create this Budget Office. So that process is going. There was a press release on that. I don't know if all members were aware of or are aware of that. So that process is ongoing, but it is unfortunately, as well as fortunately, it's a complicated, it's a long process. It's something that we are developing and growing into, but at this point in time, I don't think we can just jump and do it. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Do you want to follow up, Honorable Harris?
Yeah, I just need some advice from the advocate, because I understand the Honourable Ambrosini's proposal is before us. I understand all of the knock-on effects with the money bills. However, I think the committee needs to understand the actual impact of this proposal. Hypothetically, if the committee supports Mr. Ambrosini, and I would imagine that because this is a process of consideration of this bill formally, and we are doing it clause by clause, we could accept the Honourable Ambrosini's proposal. That would immediately double these rebates. What would the implication of that be? I mean, would we then be in breach of, as Treasury says, the Money Bills Act? What is the implication of this committee passing that proposal? Chair, I mean, I don't think we can get away from the fact that we're now formally considering this bill. If we're going through it and considering it clause by clause, then surely the point should be that we are changing it if we see so fit, or approving it if we see fit to do that. I'm interested in the actual implication of this proposal if we did vote on it as a committee.
You come in. Let me allow other members to pose their questions or make their comment. Honourable Dubezana, and followed by Honourable Chabalal.
Thank
Honourable
you.
Ross.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, the advocate has actually highlighted to us that the proposal is so congested to such an extent that it acquires under understanding of other provisions. As a result, the officials from the National Treasury, Janine, actually indicated that the minister needs to be informed about the proposal and needs to be given 14 days to decide. So as to what is it going to do to the fiscus, I therefore, Honourable Chair, as the ANC, do not support the proposal that has been said by Ambrosini. Thank you, Chair.
Submission. Chabalala, Honourable Ross.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think, you know, when we started, I don't remember how many weeks back, when there was an issue of the vote, and apparently Honourable Tim really loves to go directly to that, and I don't understand why. Specifically when we're in the midst of the discussion, you don't rush to go to say, let's vote in the matter. Can we have an understanding and debate on it so that when we disagree or agree, at least we've had that opportunity before we even rush there? But also, Chairperson, you see, we cannot also hold the legal advisor to ransom, or rather advocate to ransom. Honorable Ambrosini says to us that, no, look, unfortunately, we have to do this thing to you, give us an advice on certain matters. But also to also go further to say, on a procedural matter, when we also dealing with the bill itself, we can also defer to him and say, tell us what is the implication of us going ahead of this one, despite the advice that we're getting. That's really immature for me. So I'm saying, from one sitting person, it's very clear to say that from what the advocates have advised us, that there's a process that is in place that we can be able to go to section 13, where therefore it says that if there's an amendment that we are proposing, that therefore allow the minister an opportunity to come and give it to us. What we can do procedurally, I think, is to note what we're saying, but not to agree on it, but we can note the amendment to say the committee has further propose an amendment, and you won't hear me, Honorable Ambrosini, because we are talking while we are also doing submission. Sorry, Honorable Harris. So I'm saying that from one sitting, the committee can note if there's a changes that we would want to make, or rather effecting the bills, but not to say that we are agreeing, let's effect bills, just double, the rebate, almost as if there's no consequences of everything that we're doing. So I feel, Chairperson, we need not to be careless around our own issues and be able to play around. We're very serious here. We want to move on with this bill. So if there's an issue that honorable members want to make, we can note them and be able to get the responses that's been said. So why are we holding this situation to ransom, or rather this process? Must be serious,
yeah. Okay, Janina has noted you, but let's allow members to comment and pose their question. Then yourself and Advocate Jenkins will come at the tail end.
Thank you, Speaker. Yes, I feel much better after the previous speaker said that the concerns need to be noted, because it's important for us to do the responsible thing in terms of when there's a proposal that the rebate should be doubled and it has a severe impact on the most vulnerable of society. Then you have to ask yourself the question as a Member of Parliament, if the process also allows for you to refer it to the Minister so that the Minister can ultimately consider, and we will accept that recommendation from the Minister if it's procedurally too problematic to change it. But then from my personal point of view, I would like to have the different view of saying, I think the responsible thing would be to say, if the Minister will approve it in terms of the process, and we will accept whatever his recommendation would be, it would be noted, as the previous member said, but I would support that we make a recommendation that the rebates be doubled in terms of the small amounts and the impact that it could have on the most vulnerable of society. Thank you.
Honourable. No, you just have your turn, and I think you have made your point. Honourable Luenge, Honourable Mteta, Honourable Ambrosini, do you still have to have a take before I give Advocate Jenkins and Ms. Jenin an opportunity?
Mr. Chairman, I said what I had to say. I think that we have the power to do it. It starts here. Once we do it, there are lots of steps to be taken, but it all starts from us deciding collegially whether or not it's something we want.
But you are not a good listener. I was just requesting an indication from your side if you still have to want another bite after other members have spoken. So now you are just speaking without me giving a go ahead. But it's fine. You have made your point.
Apology.
Honorable Luenge?
Chairperson, here, we need to agree that here there is no recommendation that we are agreeing upon to say this is what we recommend to the minister. But what we seek is clarity. So at no stage have we not agreed as ANC to say if the political head of this department is needed to make a particular clarity. That has happened even before. It is new, Chairperson, the notion of voting for decisions in this committee. And it is new, and it has actually came up on the arrival of the Honourable Member Ambrosini. We have not been operating team. The Honourable Member, Chairperson, is completely out of order. We cannot be held at ransom on each and every aspect. I mean, here we are all representing Parliament. not necessarily representing parties. We are not party members when we are here. We are parliament. We are a committee, and parliament actually is actually looking at us, is relying on us. It's upon our considerations that we make here. So we cannot differ. We cannot always put forward our political point scoring. It's not going to help. It is not fair. We can't work like this, Chairperson.
Honorable Mthethwa, followed by... Okay, I think you have covered the... Honorable Mthethwa, come in.
No, the later speaker, Chair, covers me in a number of ways, because I wanted to find a better way to say, because if we say we note, it cannot be noted by the committee as if we all got a concern. We don't have a concern in this matter. If the IFP wanted a clarity, they must write a clarity on behalf of the IFP, but not on behalf of the committee. The committee unanimously agree on most of the certain issues as a committee. But if you want to be individualized, then it's fine. You can go and seek that clarity. Anyway, the legal gurus are here, can assist outside the meeting, but that can't be noted within the meeting as if it's a committee that's got a problem.
Okay. Janine, you want to come in while Mr. Jenkins is still caucusing?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And we do note the concerns that have been raised by certain members of the committee in relation to these particular thresholds, and we will take that certainly under consideration for the development of future legislation. And just to assist the committee further in understanding the processes relating to the amendment of the revenue bills, it is also notable that in terms of Section 11 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, that the committee would need to consider in proposing any amendments and indicate in its report how the total amount of revenue that would be raised in light of the amendments proposed would be consistent with the approved fiscal framework and the division of revenue bill. And those have already been enacted, so it has to fit within those guidelines. And it would have to take into account principles of equity, efficiency, certainty, and ease of collection, and consider the impact of the proposed change on the composition of tax revenue, including with the balance between direct and indirect taxes, and it would also need to consider regional and international tax trends, and also consider the impact on development, investment, employment, and economic growth. So the committee in its report, if it is proposing amendments, needs to indicate that it has taken all of those factors into consideration and shows that how those amendments are consistent in line with those required factors and the implications. And so that then Parliament, when it's considering whether or not to pass any amendments, it is also then appropriately informed and has appropriate guidance in when it's properly deliberating on any proposed amendments that may come from the committee. Thank you.
Okay, Honourable Jacobs, do you want to add on to what has been said? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, just very briefly, because I agree with what my colleague from Treasury is saying there in terms of the procedure. But that Act also requires that any proposed amendments must be properly motivated. And we need the Budget Office to do that, and we need to engage with the Committees on Appropriations, because what we're dealing with specifically in Clause 2, from my understanding, it only applies to taxpayers. It doesn't apply to the most vulnerable who does not even earn money, or who earns money but below the level that you don't pay tax. So what you're taking away, you might be taking away from the most vulnerable. But that's a motivation that one needs to debate and consider, because it's required in terms of the Constitution to be developmental orientated, to ensure the social justice, and it's repeated in that the Money Bills Amendment Procedure with the principles there. So it is not a quick decision that one takes. It's really a considered decision. What are the impact of those specific provisions? Are you not taking away from the people you're trying to help? Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, members, for your submissions on the matter. I think it's very clear because from all the submission made, this whole issue takes us to what is to me a very, very serious area that we still need to strengthen our capacity as a committee in terms of interrogating timely and at an appropriate time some of these issues, you know. So that simply says this is one area that we really need to improve on as a committee going forward. And of course, being sympathetic to the submission made by, which in my take is very genuine, by Honorable Ambrosini, as to how do we determine this rate. I will definitely request that we entertain this, I mean, beyond this particular process and try to establish exactly when is the right time for us to make such determination, because that's, to me, that's very key. Because the issue of the budget office is fine, but the root of the matter is that we are expected to apply our mind robustly on these particular provisions, and I think we need to make an appropriate determination while we are still waiting for the establishment of the budget office as to when is the right time, I mean, for us to make those particular interventions. Because if you look into the provisions of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure Act, it's very clear that if we take that route as suggested by Honorable Ambrosini, there might be a very unfortunate repercussions, because then we'll have to wait for the minister to respond to our changes for 14 days. And as we still remember, members, National Treasury made a special request that this is one bill that must be fast-tracked in terms of parliament processes. So in a nutshell, really, yeah, the submissions are noted, and we'll just have to establish a way of ensuring that in future we deal with these particular provisions more appropriately. The other alternative is for us to, while we get the presentation from National Treasury, let's also take advantage of robustly interrogating some of these figures while National Treasury is here with us, because that will also help to clarify some of these things. That is over and above listening to their responses to stakeholder submissions. But in a nutshell, the submissions are noted around clause 2, subsection 1, A, B, C. Can we then move to the next subsection, which is subsection 3,
clause 2? Point of clarity.
Honorable Ambrosini.
You have a motion before you, and I'm trying to seek clarity for the record of the status of my motion, because either you put it to the committee or you rule it out of order. I don't see any other procedural option.
Honorable Ambrosini, I think members have tried to clarify this, that as a committee, we are noting this particular concerns, and we are committing to ensure that we work on them beyond this process. So I'm not sure if you really need something special on this matter. Honorable Kuranov, you want to say something?
Chairperson, I suggest you rule it out of order.
Sorry, you know, I'm having a problem with this thing. I just get an echo. I don't hear members clearly. I'm struggling. And there are no, what is this? There are no earphones here. Honorable Goranov, what were you suggesting?
I suggest that you rule it out of order, his proposal.
No, in fact, what I was saying is that we are not throwing it out. We will consider it as we move forward as a committee. We are noting your submission and very sympathetic to it. We will continue to consider how to best improve in terms of dealing with some of these identified. In fact, it's not a weakness. What you are saying is that let's ensure that our rates are inflation rate, what you call related. And obviously, it's another process because we also need to come to appropriate determination as to what is it that we are considering to. Because if you say double them is not an answer. But now what I'm saying is that your submissions order, we need as a committee, I think we are duty bound to familiarize ourselves with what goes into these figures. But now obviously we can't reverse this process now because it might have the unfortunate or unintended circumstances. So we note and we are intending to deal with these issues as we go forward. So in that session then, I think this matter is dealt with and we will continue to deal with it going forward. We move now to section 3, subsection 1, Roman figure 1, 2 and 3.
The Chairman, you have not put subsection 2.
Honourable Ambrosini?
I'm not clear. Would you repeat which section is before us? Which clause is before us?
We are on clause 3, subsection 1, Roman figure 1, 2, and 3.
In that case, Mr. Chairman, you have not put to the committee sub-clause 2 of clause 2.
You tend to confuse me. I'm not a magistrate or a lawyer. I'm a chairperson, yeah. So please try to simplify this meeting for me because really I'm not even sure what is it that you are referring to.
Mr. Chairman, the debate we have had until now related to clause 2, sub-clause 1, A, B, and C. I moved the motion. I'm not sure what happened, but then you closed it. Now I want to move to sub-clause 2 of clause 2.
Do you have anything to say on that sub-clause? We are there. We are on subsection, clause 2, subsection 2. I can see you are now trying to impart your legal skills, but it's fine. I will accept those. Now we are on clause 3. Order members, let's stick to the procedure of the meeting. Raise your hand if you want to say something. Honorable Chacho?
Chair, you know the advice that we got it from the back is not different like to the rest of the other clauses. It's the same thing. We will be keep on saying one and the same thing towards until the end of this document. With me, Chair, was going to be one of those that would propose, why don't we come to the conclusion of this document? Because that advice was taking us throughout the document. Before other people comes in and jumps, and we understand their legal expertise, we respect it, but taking what the advocate has advised us with, really, there's nothing different, Chair, not unless you want to confirm yourself subsection 1, subsection 3, subsection 4, until the end, because that advice was summarizing the whole document. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, members, please let's exercise patience. We have agreed to take this approach. We're going to conclude our session in this approach. It's okay. Let's make sure that we follow on to what is prescribed by procedures. Ambrosini is very, you know, he has missed a lot of our committee meetings, so he really wants to add value to this. So let's give him an opportunity. We are now on subsection, on clause 3, subsection 1, from figure 1, 2, up to 3. Agreed. We are now moving to clause 3, subsection 2. Agreed. We are now moving to clause 4, subsection 1. I think there's double A, double B. Agreed. Clause 4, subsection 2.
Chairman, please note my objection.
Honorable Ambrosini?
4, sub 2.
Oh, we are Yeah, no thing, it's fine. We are not in objection, Honourable Ambrosini. We are now moving to clause 5, subsection A. We are now moving to the next page, page 4, clause 5, subsection 2.
Please note my objection, Mr. Chairman. Apologies, wrong. I withdraw that. Chairman, I misspoke. I withdraw what I said.
You'll just have to pardon me. No, I don't hear it clearly. What I say, must we also note the objection on this one?
No, I was going to. I made a mistake. My humble apologies. Please, I withdraw what I said.
All right. Thank you for being considerate. We are now moving to clause 6, subsection 1. Clause 6, subsection 2. Clause 7, subsection 1. Clause 7, subsection 2. Clause 8, subsection 1. Clause 8, subsection 2.
Mr. Chairman.
Honorable Ambrosin.
I wish the record to reflect that again, in respect of this, I think it would be appropriate to double the figures.
Some approach will be applicable, as you are suggesting. You are saying? Are you referring to sub
8 sub 1.
What is your specific submission in that one?
Subject to your ruling, I move here as well that the figures set out therein be doubled.
Or be doubled.
My motion will follow within your previous ruling, whatever that was.
Yeah, submission is noted. Subsection plus 8, subsection 2. Clause 9, subsection 1. Honorable Harris.
Chair, the DA, in debating the fiscal framework, came out against the increase in the inclusion rates on capital gains tax because we see it as a tax on savings in a country where we have a chronically low savings rate. If we hadn't had been through the committee now, the process of trying to amend Clause 2, then I would be proposing now that we simply delete Clause 9. However, I understand that would potentially put us in contravention of the money bills. Therefore, I think it would be appropriate if simply the Democratic Alliance objection to Section 9 is noted.
Honourable Ambrosini.
Mr. Chairman, I do feel that we have the power to amend the bill and then we need to deal with the subsequent steps set out in the money bill related matters amendment act, and therefore I do formally move that it be deleted, which I trust I think will fall within the same ruling you made earlier. And would like, if you allow me to expand on the motivation given by the Honourable Harris, again, Mr. Chairman, making reference to you and I. This is after-tax money. We earn the money, we pay our taxes on it, we invest it, and there is a capital gain. And the capital gain tax is increased on us. And what this tax reflects is inflation. We are using inflation figures which do not reflect the cost of living. So you and I, our families, everyone else, in terms of these are going to pay more taxes on inflation on the money we saved after having paid taxes is something which I think in this economic situation is unconscionable. And that's my motivation. My motivation for it to be deleted.
Are you calling for the removal of clause 9, the whole of clause 9, subsection 1 and subsection 2, Honourable Ambrosin?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Members, there is this motion. Could you please entertain it?
Chairperson.
Honourable Goranov.
Firstly, Chairperson, I think again he's out of order, but we can't restart the whole debate we've just had on his previous proposal. But I think he's out of order. I've been to this committee this term and previous terms, other matters. It's the first time ever that I've seen that people come here and trying to change this. It is completely against the convention. It's not possible. And I think that's why I've asked the question previously, are we within the legal framework by doing this? Otherwise, all other committees would have done it before us. I don't know. We might just get a good legal opinion on that. But I think we cannot do it here. But what I want to record is also my party's objection to the increase of this. But I think that's the... we cannot go further than that as political parties.
Honourable Tubezana.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The Honourable Goranov has actually covered me, because if we delete subsection 9, we'll then be contradicting ourselves with subsection 2. So it is out of order. Thank you.
In the same spirit of our previous discussion, we will then not go the process of deleting, Honourable Ambrosini. We will only note what your submission is all about, and obviously allow further entertainment of the said that clause beyond this process. Honourable Mteta, because I was trying to wrap up on this one.
No, you're right, Chair. You know we proposed going clause by clause. Can you entertain me, Chair, that let me put a new proposal of wrapping up this matter? Because in each and every clause going down, we'll be coming against the very same thing. I think that that legal opinion was assisting us on that. This can't be done that we can do some amendment here. That's why we are saying we've got this document. Can we move adoption of that? If I'm seconded, Chair, let's check that opinion, whether it flies in this meeting or it still stands that you go point by point. Otherwise, close by close, otherwise we'll be keep on saying out of order, yes, continue, noting my objection. This is strange to the organization. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much for your submission, Honourable Chair. I will once more going to plead for your patience, because we are now on paragraph clause 9, while we have to deal with 14 clauses. We are almost there. So let's just conclude it in that fashion. But I've made a ruling on clause 9. So we are moving to clause 10. Clause 10, subsection 1, clause 10, subsection 2, clause 11, subsection 1, A, B, and C. Is that A and B? Clause 11, subsection 2, clause 12, subsection 1, A. Clause 12, subsection 2. Clause 13, subsection 1A. Clause 13, subsection 2. And lastly, clause 14, subsection 1, 2, and 3.
we still have clause 50. And clause 50. Honorable Ambrosin, do you agree to the act being called Rates, Monetary Amounts and Amendments of Revenue Laws Act? Are you content with that? That concludes then us going through this particular act. Now, I'm going to put the motion to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, point of order. You need to put the annexure 1 to the committee.
Sorry, I'm not allowed to say.
The appendix to the committee.
I really don't know. Honorable, what I say?
The committee has to express itself in respect of the two appendix to be found on page 7 and page 8 and 9, 10 and 11, and so on and so forth, which will have an enormous impact. There is where we're all going to pay more on all our vices, booze, smoke, etc. So since we are imposing on the citizenry these enormous burdens, let's at least go through the motion of showing that we vote on them and analyze them for a few minutes.
I thought that the appendices are just used to enrich, the clauses that you have dealt with. So you use those simultaneously so as to understand, the content of the bill. So if you now want us to go through the appendix, definitely that will take us back to the clauses that we have just dealt with. And by that saying, I imply that we are done with this particular bill. Could I please put a motion to the committee? I'm not sure what...
Chairperson, can I just suggest that you put Appendix 1 and 2? Just put it like Appendix 1 and 2, and then you go to the desirability motion.
Very interesting. It's fine. Any submission on Appendix 1 or matters that members would like us to consider on Appendix 1?
This is not my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Are you objecting to the role of Appendix 1, or what is it that you are saying, Honorable Ambrosini?
I'm objecting to the role of Appendix 1 in respect of certain portions, but for the sake of progress, I'm not going to identify the portions. But since you are putting the entire lecture as a single question, which you have the privilege to do, I'm requesting you to note my objection.
Thank you very much. Appendix 2? Any issue on Appendix 2?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, please, as a wine-drinking person, do note my objection to this appendix.
Your objections are noted. Thank you very much, Honorable Ambrosini. Thank you very much, members. I'm going to put the motion now to the committee. The Standing Committee on Finance, the report of the Standing Committee on Finance on the Rates and Monetary Amounts and Amendment of Revenue Laws Bill, B10-2012, National Assembly Section 77, dated 6 June, 2012. The Standing Committee on Finance, having considered and examined the Rates and Monetary Amounts and Amendment of Revenue Laws Bill, National Assembly Section 77, referred to it and classified by the JTM as a money bill, reports that it has agreed to the bill. Agreed?
Mr. Chairman, please note the objection of the Nkata Freedom Party.
All right, thank you. So that simply says we are done with. Obviously, we have taken note of, more especially on the issue of the rebate issue on clause 2, subsection 1. As a committee, we'll have to obviously deal with these issues as we continue this whole process. Now, our next item, members, will be on the... How late is it now?
Chairman, I point of order, the right to tea.
I'll let it. Is it 10 to 5? Members, we have a 10 minutes break, more especially after our prolonged session, which is highly welcome, it's fine. And then we'll be back at 12 o'clock, is it? At 11 o'clock, please. Thank you.
Game.